Hey everybody, it's John Suntress here with a cold opening to this episode of Word Balloon with some big announcements regarding the San Diego Comic-Con. After a two-year absence, Word Balloon is returning to San Diego for next month's Comic-Con International. I've been asked to moderate and appear on a couple panels, in addition to my usual bird-dogging fun of roaming the aisles looking for floor interviews. Now, leading up to the show, there'll be many Road to San Diego episodes of Word Balloon featuring top creators, including another Bendis tape session after this episode. Great people. Jason Aaron is already booked in, and a few more. I don't want to name names until they're locked in, but I guarantee you a big list of great creators. Now, if you're a vendor or a small publisher heading to the con, I'm offering an affordable advertising option for the next few weeks. Sometimes the floor can be a blur to attendees, but by advertising on an episode of Word Balloon, your message will be heard by thousands, and it's the best direct marketing option to guide congoers to your specific booth number and product. Yes, this is the pitch. This is a perfect opportunity for small publishers and vendors. An ad buy on Word Balloon will give you a top of the show and end of the show podcast commercial read by me. Plus, I'll even perform a short phone interview with you about your San Diego promotion. To check out the affordable spot rates and more details, you can send me an email, john@wordballoon.com. Now, on with the show. In association with iFanboy, welcome again to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress, and today it's part 5 of the Bendis tapes. That's right, our summer vacation with Brian Michael Bendis continues as we pour through more questions from his Jinx World message board. Now, we'll be talking more about the debut of New Avengers, crunch the numbers of how comics are selling in general today compared to 2 to 3 years ago, some great movie talk, and more about our plans for San Diego Comic-Con and the panels that Bendis will be holding. We also have Edward David Gill, the author of an interesting political espionage thriller, which is sponsoring today's episode. Word Balloon Today is brought to you by The Expert on Everything, a novel that's been described as Catch-22 meets 3 Days of the Condor. A young man is offered a six-figure job at Vector Systems and is mistakenly handed a prototype piece of technology that can effectively wipe out all privacy in our society. He's pursued by a governor with presidential ambitions, several U.S. senators, and begins to get death threats from the technology itself, which seems to have developed artificial intelligence. BookReview.com gives The Expert on Everything 5 stars and calls it a smooth, interesting techno-thriller. You can purchase the book at Amazon.com or at Gill's website, TheExpertOnEverything.com. Check it out today, The Expert on Everything novel from Edward David Gill. More on the book at the end of the podcast, but right now let's go back to 2 Saturdays ago as we continue our conversation with Brian Michael Bendis. It's the Bendis Tapes here on Word Balloon. Odino 1. Brian and John, I'm an iFanboy member that just joined your Jinx World Forum.
Yay.
I'm in my 30s, and I'm a small...
I'm an iCarly member, so...
I'm in my 30s, and I feel I'm supporting the comic industry now more than ever due to a good recession-proof job, a university professor of finance, and a wife that doesn't mind if I store comic books in our bedroom.
Wow.
Honey, would you like to step over the Marvel 2-in-1 and enter the boudoir?
You know none of what he just said was true, but go on. Yeah.
No. Just one question. Recently,
a comic fan with a job and a wife, please.
Exactly. Recently, sales of your Avenger books, that I love, by the way, have been down 20% from the numbers of the previous year, according to Diamond Data. You know, honestly, Brian, that's interesting that this question come up because independent of the Bendis tapes, yeah. I was looking at numbers for like the same months in different years. And you go back 2 years, and yeah, numbers are significantly down.
For everybody.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. But he says...
My books are exactly where they were 2 years ago. They're sitting there.
What do you think the reason is? Really?
Because
honestly, I don't think that's true, Brian. I think Secret Invasion's numbers were much higher than
No, they were. But Siege did very well. It was, number two books.
I understand. Those numbers, you're right about that. But wait, let's finish this question first,
okay.
Which is, what do you think the reason is? Tougher competition from DC. Have you read about Blackest Night? The increase in prices from $2.99 to $3.99, or something else? Now go ahead.
DC is doing very well with Blackest Night. They have a excellent marketing program for that book with the rings and all that. They did very, very good.
Mm-hmm.
Very excellent. And I'm a big fan of Jeff's, and I'm thrilled that he knocked us out of the park.
Mm-hmm.
Thrilled, because we've known about the people in the industry. We've known this is coming for 5 years. And he was building towards this, and he deserved to knock it out of the park.
Yeah, from day one of Green Lantern. Absolutely,
yeah.
Yes.
So I don't feel competition to it. I don't feel that people actually stand in the store holding one book in one hand and the other and weigh them. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I also think that Jeff and I have an inordinate amount of the same readers. There's other writers I don't feel, we don't have any crossover. Even friends of mine, where you go, wow, it's funny, no one reads both our books. So, I think price, and listen, it was a recession. It was really, really bad last year. Things are looking up. Not in Florida, but things are looking up. And we feel it. Dramatically, what happens is, and I've been through this a couple of times, where there'll be an off year, and then the next year things are back, and then trade sales go through the crazy roof, like crazy. Now, and then things level out. Now, Siege did not do as good as Secret Invasion.
Mm-hmm.
Secret Invasion did crazy good.
Right.
Okay. Like
yes,
way over what I thought it was going to do.
Okay.
And that there was two and I asked, I go, why didn't Siege do, and here I can talk from a healthier standpoint, because both Avengers and New Avengers launched gigantic, really big numbers as they already were posted online on Friday. So I'm not bragging. I'm just saying on the index, we one of the biggest numbers I've ever had on Avengers. And I said, I wonder why Siege didn't sell as well as Avengers and, you know, these other things. And Gabriel pointed out that Siege was ordered as a finale, and finales don't do as big as starts. And when you start something, people jump on. When you end something, people wait and see. And I went, oh, that's it. And again, it by any means didn't tank. It did a great amount of numbers.
Understood.
But it didn't do Secret Invasion numbers, and I know that's what people look at, but they were two different animals. I'm not making excuses at all. Love the book. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But
no.
That's what it was. And there was that weird thing where, because of the format of it, a lot of it was spoiled just by the way things were solicited. Like, you already knew who the Avengers were. Well, you know then they're not going to die in Siege. So there was a little bit of that. I think price is an issue for some people. But I think what proves when you have books that take off, like I have right now, that it's not make or break. If they want it, they'll buy it. And that's kind of been the philosophy. If they want it, they'll buy it. If they don't, they don't. You know? But things are on an upswing right now.
Okay.
And listen, I was on the other end of it, where Secret Invasion was doing crazy numbers and Final Crisis was right underneath us, and people were going, oh, Final Crisis, oh, boy, and I'm like, look how great it's doing.
And actually,
look what it is, and look how great it's doing. How could you, this is the culture where people, it failed. And it didn't, on any stretch of the imagination. I'm saying there's other things like that where people are quick to judge or quick to label, and you know, like
right.
That's not true.
I will say that I'm looking at these May 2010 numbers,
mm-hmm.
and they are more comparable to what I did see 3 years ago in like 2007.
Yeah, I mean, it comes and goes in waves.
Okay.
I actually thought that, but I look at it and I don't have much control over stuff, but I'm looking at them going, I actually thought Dark Avengers 16 would do better than New Avengers Finale, because it was the finale of a book that was doing better than New Avengers Finale did better.
It did. I'll even quote the numbers here. Dark Avengers, again, this is order.
Those are number. Those aren't the.
Oh, that's right. Those are the order index. You're right. Those are the real numbers.
The estimates are always incorrect.
Okay.
They're only correct in relation to each other.
Yes, I understand.
And even that's a little wobbly, because you'll have a book, let's say, you know, Blackest Night or Brightest Night, or I'm not being sarcastic, can't think of
Brightest Day.
Brightest Day will have a spike of 20,000 in sales, like in reorders,
mm-hmm.
that week. That counts. But you're not seeing it on that list right there.
Gotcha.
Same thing with Avengers. Let's say Secret Avengers. I know there was a both Secret Avengers and Avengers had a crazy amount of reorder activity. That's not included in that number.
True. Right there. Okay, so that's right. You're right, and you're right about that. Like, you
but
know,
those about all those books in the top 10, other than my hugely selling number one book, could go to 4 to 6 to 8 to 4. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Depending on, and again, they're all doing great. But if you're looking for rankings, that's how that works.
ComicCron.com is a great place to compare numbers.
And I hate it.
Oh, well, I understand.
Here's the thing. I'm thrilled it worked. It's great to have this a book do well. Oh, if I cannot think of it ever again, it would be great. It's nauseating.
Well, I understand. I understand, but some people are interested in the horse race.
I hate every word that's coming out of my mouth.
The only reason why I think it's still interesting is because of this digital market that is coming out. And also, again, where is the economy? Because further, not only are people not able to buy it, how many stores are still around? I wonder how many stores got eliminated with the economic crunch.
I don't know. The stores in Portland seem to be okay, so like no one folded here.
Well, I can
so
think,
I don't feel anything.
And Chicago remains a healthy market too, but I do know of a couple stores that aren't in business anymore that were 2 years ago. So who's to say? I understand.
Yeah.
All right, let's see. Moving on. I thought, yeah, worth checking out.
No, absolutely. But they always, this is how, whereas your books, I'm like, not my, but everyone's book. If New Avengers is the number four book in the country 3 years ago, it's the number four book in the country today, but sales are down 20%. I mean, sales are down across the board.
But it's more than 20% in some cases. I mean, that's the thing. Like you said, these books were indexing.
I'm going by his Michigan.
Oh, I see. Because
I'm saying like.
Oh, that's true. He specifically is saying 20% from the
20%.
But
if every if and it hasn't budged on the sales chart, what does that say?
Right.
That's
Excuse
all.
Me. Okay.
Okay.
The Funketeer.
I'm failing. I'm failing. That's all I yell at. That's all I do.
Let's see. How involved are you in the advertising and solicitation for your books? For example, did you have any say in the I'm an Avenger ad?
I didn't. I had nothing to do with those I'm an Avenger ads. I was thrilled to see them. I write the solicitation for my books, which I know will shock and annoy many people because they always think it's over the top bullshit. But you know what? This is the house that Stan built, and I'm writing some over the top bullshit.
Attaboy.
That's what you do, man. We're selling, and it's fun.
Sure.
And I like writing. The world will never be the same again. ellipsis.
I like his ultimate.
But I involve myself, obviously, going through any of the interviews that come our way and what have you. And, you know, I'm out there. I'm out there twittering away.
Yes, you are.
Selling.
Did you get a Disney Silver Pass in the buyout? And if so, have you used it? And what is your family's favorite ride?
Well, we haven't gone since the buyout, so I don't know what I get, but I'll find out when the time comes. I'm sure I can swing something. I got a Universal Pass when I needed it.
That's cool.
So I got to go on those rides. So
fantastic. Would you eat at the Marvel restaurant?
I did. Did I eat at the Marvel restaurant? We went into the Marvel restaurant, Marvel Mania.
Okay, I've never been, so I just
yeah. Remember. No, we went in there. I don't think we ended up eating there. I think they were just closing when we went there. We ended up at BB King's.
Okay.
I know my friend Mark and Drake has a menu and a plate or something that he stole or he got. Or,
can I have the Caledonia cantaloupe, please? What makes your big head so big? Or whatever that line is from Caledonia.
Yeah.
I love BB King.
I know.
Chicago. No, Chicago, man. Come on. It's
I know. I've seen BB King live 7 times. How about that?
How many times have you seen the BB King diabetes commercial?
I don't think I ever have. That's sad.
That is sad.
Some of the best concerts I've ever been to in my life have been BB King.
As we speak, Blues Fest is going on in Chicago this weekend. I saw some of it on Friday.
I saw him back when he stood up during the concert.
That's right. When Lucille still had her shape.
I'm going to have a seat. I remember I saw him at the Cleveland Agora. Place went nuts afterwards. Guy came up with a tried to subpoena him from the stage.
No way.
Yeah.
Wow.
And he wouldn't take it. It was hilarious.
That's awesome.
He goes, "You've been served," and threw it at him. And he held up his hands like, I don't know you.
The biggest jerk I ever saw perform, although it was still cool seeing him, Bo Diddley.
I saw Bo Diddley was at one of the concerts.
So he was, I mean, he's...
What was he a jerk?
He was not happy. Things were not, I mean, and obviously he was on a very small stage and things weren't going well, and he was quick to point it out to everybody.
Right,
so it's like, wow, Bo Diddley's not having a good time.
No.
Exactly. That's the Bo Diddley beat. Okay, NBC, it's NB Cabanis or NBC Abanis? I'm not really sure, but he's a first-time poster. Got the timing right and finally able to participate in the Bendis tapes. Excitement.
excitement.
His questions. In filmmaking, there's something called the line of axis, sort of an invisible line between two characters' eyes when having a conversation.
Yeah.
There's a rule that you can pick a side of this line to place the camera for all your shots and never cross it, the idea being that it creates a mental map for the audience so they can keep better track of the action. As a comic writer and artist, do you feel this technique applies to comics as well?
For the artist, it does, absolutely. And the good ones do it, whether they know that's what it's called or not.
Yep.
Yeah. It even goes further than that. There are certain comic artists that are very good at it looks like the character's actually thinking, like the lights are on in somebody's home. This is a
yeah.
No, but it's a hidden art that can really make or break a script. You got a wonderful script, but the character has dead eyes.
Sure.
Like Alvin and the Chipmunks in the first one. this it can really ruin it, you know.
So, I understand.
And so it's them looking at each other like they're listening. This is, it's all very important.
Oh, here's an interesting reach back. People always whine, when is Bendis going to write Batman? Without knowing that you already have.
That's right.
Batman Chronicles number 21, the story of Citizen Wayne, with art by Michael Gatos. I was just wondering if you could tell us a little bit about the genesis of this story and why you never bring it up to silence all the Batwhiners out there. Actually, I've heard you say it before.
But this is see that question right there? That is a perfect example of one of my Mavic questions. It's not really a question.
No, but
he was letting me know. I did just before I signed on for Ultimate Spider-Man. Me and Michael Gatiss did a 8-page or 11-page, I don't remember, called Citizen Wayne, which was an Elseworlds story, as in what if Batman was Citizen Kane? Citizen Wayne.
Get it?
Anyway, so it was an exact panel-for-panel reinterpretation of the Citizen Kane movie as if it were Batman. And Rosebud, I don't want to ruin it for you, was the bullet that killed his parents. Anyway, so...
Nice.
Yeah, thank you. It's actually lovely, well-drawn. My editor at the time, who I can't thank enough for giving me the gig, had never seen Citizen Kane, and we were well into lettering the book before he even... I made a reference to, that's from the movie. And he goes, what movie? And I said, Citizen Kane.
Oh,
he goes, you're doing Citizen Kane. I've never seen that.
Wow.
I know. I was like, well, I thought I joked it. And he goes, no, it's a very good story. I go, yeah, it's Citizen Kane. It's a very good story. But I'm not making fun of the guy because he was great to hire me. But it was a time where a good way to break in would have been these Elseworlds. Like, they were taking a lot of Elseworlds
pitches.
Yeah,
absolutely. And
I was approached to pitch Elseworlds. I pitched, what if Joker was Bugsy Siegel? I mean, anything that I thought was a strength of mine that I could turn into an Elseworlds, I pitched. None of it was any interesting to anybody. I have them somewhere. I should dig them up.
Who was the editor?
I'm sure they're hilarious.
Who was the editor back then? Do you remember?
Oh, man. I'm totally blanking. I don't even want to say because I have names in my head, but I don't think they're right.
Okay.
And the one that stuck to the wall was Citizen Wayne, and they did it. Glad I did it, too, because it just got me and Gatiss our wheels turning for Alias. And it's funny because it... shows up in these Best of Batman books because
yes.
It's a really cheap, effective way to get my name in the book, even though by any stretch of the imagination is it anywhere near anything close to Best of anything Batman. But I appreciate the check that comes.
There was
I still get royalties from it, and I'm like, really?
There was speculation on Chapter 3 of the Bendis tapes about when DC backed up the truck for you and Maleev to come over. And was it to do Batman or?
This one I remember pretty clearly because it haunts me as one of those things when I'm out of work in a few years.
Yeah.
And I called them up and go, I'm ready.
And you are, and that is.
Yeah, exactly. We were at one of the high points of our Daredevil run. We may have just won the Eisners for it, and Bob Schreck called. A good dude.
And, great dude, yeah.
He called and said, we want you to come over. And I think I was just about to sign exclusive, or I had signed exclusive, but it wasn't known yet. And I certainly would have gone over anyhow, just out of loyalty to Joe. And he said, you guys take and go, do what you want to do. And I was like, wow, boy, this is going to haunt me in a few years. But I had to say no, but I was like, wow, it's weird.
Oh,
he was to say no to that.
Because was he cool about it, or was he like, okay, you don't know what you're missing? Or
I know he wasn't not cool about it. I just said I believe I've already signed exclusive. He went, oh boy, when was this? And then I was like, oh. He's a good dude. I mean, it was nice offer, and it really was. He said, I have a blank check with your name on it, and come do Batman. And I was like, oh, what?
Yeah.
And the one person with a blank check with my name on it, and I can't cash it. Great.
Bummer.
Anyone else got a blank? Nothing. That's never happened since or before.
Okay.
So, for those who think that people are just coming at me with blank checks. And by the way, I'm sure that blank check went up to $100.
Yeah.
It's comics. I know that blank check had a...
Where do you want that zero, before or after the one?
Exactly. So,
And I'm looking forward to his IDW stuff. I understand he's got a series that he's going to be writing very soon. For IDW.
Yeah, what's he doing?
You know, I don't remember.
Is it Jurassic Park?
It is Jurassic Park. Thank you. Yes, indeed.
It'll be fun.
Very nice. Jester, ladies and gentlemen. Brian, you've done a masterful job and come full circle with the Avengers. I can't wait for more. That said, however,
dun, dun, dun.
Are there any other Marvel team books you'd like to tackle? I'd love to see you take on the FF or the X-Men.
Yeah, you know what? If you want to see like a kind of out there take on the FF, check out what's going on in the Ultimate Trilogy right now, the Ultimate Enemy Trilogy.
Yes, okay.
There's all kinds of funky, never-before-seen Ultimate Fantastic Four.
But not together, all separate. And poor Ben Grimm, man, you're putting him through the ringer.
No, you'll see. They're getting together. And Reed's dead. And and then X-Men, you know, I do. I love those characters, and on another day, it would have to be something where I completely abandon the Avengers franchise and sink my teeth into the X-Men franchise. It would be the only way I would be able to do it, and right now Matt and the gang are doing an amazing job. And as I've said before, I would wait for Matt to leave, someone else take it over, completely fuck it up, and then I come in and save it.
Sure.
You don't want to follow a run like this. This is a kick-ass run.
No, I always point out Brad Meltzer on Green Arrow, I think, is the only one of the few successful who is taking over Green Arrow, and
exactly.
And it actually worked. And you know, so Quesada be damned. Do you have any plans to do art duties for anything?
No, Quesada not be damned. He's my CCO.
There you go.
And he says CCO no. It's more about my schedule at the moment. I have drawn a cover for Scarlet number 3 that is drawn, and as soon as I find a scanner, I will scan it and send it to Alex.
Cool.
I do like to draw. It's just a matter of time.
Secret Identity, who only has 14 posts. Mm. So, yeah, we got a lot of newbies.
This is big on the newbies.
So, Mr. Bendis, this is the first... this first part is a request more than a question. I am currently in Eastern Europe, Estonia at the moment, studying for my master's degree and haven't been able to get to America in a few months.
I don't believe anything he's saying.
My best friend is 21 in a little more than a month, and I won't be home for her birthday. I was wondering if you could perhaps tell her happy birthday. Her name is Kara. It would mean the world to her and me.
I don't think she gives a shit at all. I'm just going to tell you, man. I'll say it, but she doesn't care. Kara, I know your birthday was probably months ago. When did he post this?
A little more than a month. Well, no, May 12th, so we might still be in there.
Yeah, a month ago.
Yeah.
Happy birthday, Kara. Will you please blow this man? He clearly has been waiting for you to turn 21 just for that special favor that you have for him. He loves you. Look how much he loves you. He's writing about you in a comic book message board you'll never go to and never see. Happy birthday.
He said best friend, but, you know, there could be...
No, they love each other. This is love. You can come on.
There you go.
He's sitting in Estonia thinking about her. Or he's thinking about Spider-Woman as a Skrull and writing, I'd hate it.
Also, when writing the characters, do you have different sounding voices for them in your head?
Yeah.
My mental Spider-Man is Neil Patrick Harris voiced.
Well, considering that the only voiced actor I've had who's done my... No, it's not you, but the one who did the voice for Spider-Man on my...
MTV
failed MTV Spider-Man show... was Neil Patrick Harris, who I had a hand in hiring. I had a vote in his casting, and he was the best one. So thank you. Wasn't he? He was Spider-Man, right?
Yes, he was. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, Ian Ziering was...
yeah, he was Harry. Was
Harry,
yeah.
That's right. And Lisa Loeb was MJ.
Yeah,
what the fuck? How could that show fail?
I liked it. I'm the only person that liked that show.
You're not the only person that liked it. It did all right. It just didn't exist in the universe.
I understand.
I didn't like it.
No, you've voiced your frustrations about it. Does it have to be a spider? That's still my favorite line.
Exactly. Yeah, that would be the title of my autobiography. For the guy who asked before. That's exactly what the book would be called.
Oh, God. All right, let's see. Oh, and then he says, is it different if Marvel characters rather... is it different if it's Marvel characters in terms of the voices in your head rather than the creator-owned?
To answer the serious question, I absolutely have voices in my head for the for each character. I know some people think it's the same voice. No. I more times than not, this is an old writer's, you know, a lot of writers do this. I will go to someone I know as the starting basis for that character. So, you know, Aunt May would be my mother.
Yes.
Again,
Ben Urich. Ben Urich is
Mike San Giacomo. There's all a list of people that I use. Some people who don't know it's them who I use for stuff.
So,
because I think they'll be put off by it or become self-conscious, so I just don't tell them.
Did you hear my name when you did Principal Suntress?
Yes, I did.
Did you really?
I absolutely did.
You're very kind. That's
I did, and that's why I go. You know what? I was going to change the name. I'm going to just make it him. I could see you standing in front of a bunch of parents and having a meltdown.
Oh, absolutely. On, are you
that
kidding?
That goes on two pages too long.
Absolutely. Very nice.
Yeah, I remember when I got that book and I was flipping through it. I go, oh, he's still going.
I told you, that's what Josh Flanagan said. Dude, your scene keeps going and going and going. I'm like, I know, man.
Yeah, it's like the Christopher Walken Watch monologue in the middle of the thing.
Steel of Hanso. We all know what film that's from, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Guys, first time on the phone.
That is from Homicide.
But, you know, okay. But good try. First time on the forums. Just wanted to say I really enjoyed the Bendis tapes. Anyway, my wife and I had a question. Being a Gilmore Girls fan, have you been watching Parenthood since Lauren Graham is on that show? And if so, what do you think?
I like how he makes his imaginary wife like involved in this
Dixie.
Question. Because without it's the gayest question of all time.
It's Jiminy Glick. Jiminy Glick is asking this question. My wife, Dixie, like, and I.
I have a question. Do you like your penis in a butt or in a mouth? Or... being a Gilmore Girls fan, I'm a huge, huge follower of Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants. That's where I put my Gilmore Girls allegiance.
Interesting.
Between Alexis and Bidil. No, I haven't seen Parenthood yet. I heard it's very good. And one day I hope to watch it after The Wire, Breaking Bad, Mad Men, The Dick Van Dyke Show, Family, and the 7-Up movie documentaries.
Fantastic. Thanks for putting these out. It helps make work even more entertaining. It's our pleasure, sir. Paige.
Come back now. Are you here? Listen, here's why. I'll be honest with you. I was following Lauren Graham with my Gilmore Girls love, which is still very strong. But I think Evan Almighty kind of knocked it out of me.
What was she in Evan
Almighty? The wife. She was the second lead.
Oh, I'm thinking, what was his other movie? Oh, no, Evan Almighty. I'm thinking of, no,
Bad
I was thinking
Santa.
Of...
Bad Santa, sure.
Well, I liked her in Bad Santa, too, but no, I was thinking of Jim Carrey's movie, not Stephen Carell's sequel.
Oh, no, you're talking about the much more successful Evan Almighty.
Yeah, oops, that's all right. Yeah. You know, I liked Get Smart slightly better than other people did. I still think it was a 2-star movie, but at least it was an okay 2.
Well, I have an idea. Get your daughter to like it, and then see how much you like it after the 10th time you've seen it. Boom.
Yeah, but you get Alan Arkin as the chief, Max.
You know, it's funny. The other day, my daughter was doing an Evan Almighty happy dance.
Oh, my.
And I go, what? And she's going, And I go, what's that from? She goes, you know, it's a guy with the boat.
Oh, no.
It took me like what? What boat? I got to keep an eye on what you're watching.
Honey, aim higher. Olivia. Is she going to be
Olivia's great. Do you know what movie is like hypnotic to kids now?
Tell
it's
me.
On DVD? Alice in Wonderland, the Tim Burton.
I believe it.
To me, it looks scary as shit.
You know,
like,
that
it creeps me out. Kids were memorized by it.
Felt that way about the Willy Wonka movie, which is why I didn't see Alice in Wonderland. It's just like this.
Oh, no, this is much creepier than Willy Wonka.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
But all the, yeah.
I mean, it's dark and creepy and eyeballs are popping out and stuff, and you know, like, oh.
Yeah, but she's tough. I mean, she laughed at Jaws. So
yeah, no, I know. But my little one, too. My two-year-old is sitting there.
Oh, Sabrina, too. That's funny.
Yeah.
Interesting. Regular Joe, ladies and gentlemen. Not sure if this is something that's easy to answer. I've read you and other writers write to the strengths of your artists. Can you give us some concrete examples? Have stories changed because of who you were working with? How, for example, would Ultimate Clone Saga have been different from Bagley to Immaman to LaFuente?
See, that's a very hard question to ask because that wasn't in my head when I was doing it.
Right, you knew Mark had the job, but okay.
No, there was no one else to think
well,
of.
Well, all right, let's...
And I never look at a story and go, how... I mean, it's an interesting exercise. Maybe I should do it.
Has there been a situation where you were set with an artist and then they had to pull out and you had to rethink a story because...
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
Gabriel Del Odo is not the original artist of... Secret War. There's another well-known artist who had the script in his hand for over a year.
And so the story did change, and the story had to change because of...
The guy never did it, and then we were like, okay, you're never going to do it. So we went to Gabriel, and yeah, so then I looked at his artwork, and I believe in that case it was really a matter of restructuring the action scenes. And what I thought was a more, you know what I mean? It's kind of re-choreographing them for the...
Was the original artist a painter the way Del Odo is?
No. That
okay.
was another thing, too. Then you start reimagining the scenes. And then I believe there was a lot of rewriting that went in once the pages came in. You go, okay, let's make the most of this. And also, with an artist like that, you tend to go, okay, I don't want to cover up anything, if at all possible. So you start gutting dialogue everywhere.
He was really amazing on that book. He really was.
We are reuniting.
Oh, fantastic.
Reuniting, yes. So I want you to know on what soon. That might be a San Diego thingy, if that comes together.
Okay. And that's, he's another guy that, I mean, he does beautiful work, but it takes time.
It does take time, but we may have come up with a solution.
Okay.
And we're going to do just like stick figures. I mean, just have to be so involved, you know what I mean? I told him I got good enough.
That's Iron Man over here.
Iron Man's the one with the slit eyes. And so, so I can't think of an example of like how I would approach, because what I'm doing is I'm approaching the script with that piece already in hand every single time except for the one time. But that's the one time I was writing for that other artist. But for Ultimate Spider-Man, if it's Gabriel, if it's, I mean, LaFuente, I'm already that piece has already been cast.
Okay.
You know, and it's like when I'm reading the scripts for Marvel. The early drafts, we don't know who anybody is. But as we go on, and the cast is coming together, the whole piece gets more and more colorful because every new cast member adds another flavor that the writer now has a lot of fun adapting to that artist, to that actor. So I see it as very similar. But for me, it's I already know who my lead is. And like right now, I'm writing a movie for Zac Efron. I don't imagine anybody else in the role.
Well, sure.
So that same thing.
Okay.
So I'm sitting there going, I would Gene Hackman. No, I'm thinking of only thinking of Zac Efron. And by the way, a lot of fun to do it that way.
Costello, what did Hammer stand for? The acronym or anagram, whatever it is, or whatever it is.
What it stood for? A 20% reduction in sales across the marketplace.
Wow.
I don't know what.
We didn't have
an anagram. We never came up with one. Jim McCann came up with one. I can't remember it on the top of my head, but I know one of the M's stood for Meta, and one of the other letters stood for Joe rolling his eyes at it. So that was it.
Okay.
I think it's funnier. You didn't see it all. Whatchamacallit?
He didn't see it all. Well,
you didn't find out what it was. I think it's funnier that way.
Maharaj. Another first-timer. In New Avengers, Reed Richards drew Bob Reynolds out of his self-imposed imprisonment,
mm-hmm.
and Tony Stark convinced him to join the Avengers,
yes.
so they would both be able to avert another Scarlet Witch-type situation.
Yeah, good job there.
But in Siege, that situation is exactly what happened, and Bob was killed. Have the heroes learned anything from this, and will their culpability be acknowledged in the comics?
Well, I think what we're going to do is every time they meet someone who they were worried about, they shouldn't kill them right then. Like a little Minority Report situation, they're just going to whack them because they don't feel like they don't like them, and that'll be it. I think that's good.
Fair enough.
That plan. proactive. I think that's what the Illuminati is going to turn into, like an assassin squad.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
K-Man.
I see. I know people were unnerved by the death, and it's sad that that was the only answer to that story, no matter what the heroes tried. But I think we all know in life that sometimes that is how it goes. That some people go down a certain road, no matter what you do. Thank you.
K-Man 0001. Thanks, John and Brian.
You missed a zero. You actually missed a zero.
Well, that's... Oh, did I really? All right, there you go. Well, there are four zeros and a one.
Yeah.
Between Oming Maleev, Immaman, and true legends like Alan Davis and John Romita Jr. drawing your books, it's a great time to be a Bendis fan.
Yes.
However, I miss your sequential art.
Is no, there, you don't.
Is there any chance? Yes, we've addressed this.
I don't agree with what you're saying, but thank you.
So, Scarlet cover coming.
Scarlet cover coming. Yep. Issue 3.
In 10 years at Marvel, congrats.
I mentioned that Scarlet's at the printer and shipping on time.
Fantastic.
July 7th.
July 7th. Fantastic.
Yes. And it's good. It caused a lengthy conversation in the halls of Marvel, I was happy to hear. And a good one, too. I when I heard that, I went, uh-oh. But it was a good conversation.
Regarding themes?
Regarding a storytelling technique that I used that created a very potent origin for the character in very few pages that some of the editors took a liking to. At first I went, oh no. But it was actually that I had done something that they liked a lot, and they wanted to see if it would only work in the context of the story I was telling, or is it something that could have been used elsewhere to get this information across. And I will talk about it when the book is out.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
Well, obviously something we can talk about in San Diego, obviously, too.
Hey!
What timing? In 10 years at Marvel, congratulations, by the way.
Thank you.
You've been involved in new publishing ventures like the Ultimate line, the Max line.
First F-word.
And the motion comics.
Yes.
What new initiatives would you like to see from Marvel in the next 10 years? How about the return of Trouble? That was mine. Okay, I'm sorry. That was me.
I thought Trouble was the number one book in the country. Let's see. You know, there's some stuff coming, so I'm just going to... If I say them now, it'll look like I'm being I'm some kind of genius. Because I know it's going to... Because look, he said it right there on the podcast, and then it happened. But no, I'm going to hold it in because I know it's coming. There's some initiatives coming. I think the biggest initiative that I think is that they're going to end up putting everybody who reads comics picture in the comic, in the back of the comic, little tiny dots of pictures that you can look through a magnifying glass.
And that'll
get people to buy multiple copies. Because I don't think enough is said. As much of a scam as those plastic rings were, I think putting everyone's picture in the back of the book so you have to buy like 10 copies to give out to your friends. Was maybe the funniest thing ever. Some of the comic book types, that like, there's some people who think they were in a book. They're just one of their many, many, many doppelgangers. And you've been to shows, you know what I'm talking about.
I do.
You look across the room and go, is that me? In the future?
Yeah.
Or in the past?
Yeah, sadly. with recent changes at DC, do you think the doors have reopened to allow some crossovers again? I'd love to see you co-write something with Geoff Johns if your schedule's allowed for it.
Well, it certainly opened the doors to twittering about it.
I noticed that. Yeah, I saw the other night.
Yeah,
all this,
it used to be private phone calls that we'd have with each other, and now it's turned into Twitter bombs.
Green Lantern, Iron Man crossovers in the making.
Listen, I love it. I don't know what the legalities of it at this point. So, but the will from the creators has always been there. Always been there. Back with Batman Daredevil. Always been there.
I remember it well.
But it is not up to us, my friend.
Just a comment. I'm typing these questions just hours after reading that last issue of Siege and your wrap-up issues of New Avengers and Dark Avengers. I really enjoyed each of these books and Siege as a whole, so thank you.
Well, thank you.
Yes.
That was a lot of fun that whole week.
Oh, yeah.
Fun.
No, that was great stuff, man.
That was one of the best weeks I've ever had in comics, so.
Let's see here. J. Drew. No, I'm very confused. Let's see here. Oh, here is his questions.
Okay.
He says my answers are. Hi, Brian. This is, J. Drew. Let's see. Hi, Brian and John. Thanks for doing this. My questions are, any possibility of Spider-Woman's second arc in the future?
His typing has an accent.
Yes.
I'm going to say for now that the Spider-Woman threads that are open will be addressed in Avengers. That's what I'll say for now.
And now he asks if Maleev is tired, could Gatos do something with Spider-Woman? So instead I'll ask, what is the progress on Gatos and you going back to Jessica?
It's coming up. Yeah, I've got to put the ducks in a row, but it's coming. I heard from Gaines just a couple weeks ago, so, and he listens to the podcast, so he's going to be happy to hear that, yes, it is coming.
Hi, Michael.
But I tell you, I have a framed, fully painted Gators drawing up in my house here that the Gators gave me years ago from our fully painted issue of Jessica versus J. Jonah Jameson. And Jeff Loeb was admiring it greatly, and it dawned on me right there and then that the Alias Mini should be fully painted. Thank you.
Yes, please.
All right.
Cool. Yeah. You've said that Secret War, SW...
Spider-Woman.
What's that? Oh, Spider-Woman, excuse me. You've said that that Spider-Woman will appear in every issue of Avengers, but only appear or will have an... Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry, this is in another language. But only appear or will have an important role?
Have a role important, which is even better.
Yeah, or will fallen in love with Secret Invention... with?
Yeah, I'm going to... I think he's asking how much Spider-Woman will be in Avengers. She's going to be in Avengers.
Will he love Spider-Woman in Avengers?
Yes, I believe she will. She's got the Jersey Shore hair going up. Listen, I've written many, many issues of Avengers so far, and she's in every single issue.
Very cool. All right, Jay, thank you very much. Michael Blacklist, ladies and gentlemen. John Bryan, thanks for doing another session. I love listening to these in the car and got my girlfriend interested in Bryan's work when I would listen to older episodes on long car rides early in our relationship. Listening to these always brings back good memories of the last 4 years. My questions. Did there ever come a time when you were crafting Siege when you thought you might be ready to throw in the towel with the Avengers franchise? The amazing last few pages of New Avengers Finale are a nice cap to your New Avengers era, and though I'm stoked you're staying on, it seems like it could have been a nice farewell.
It could have, but that's not... No, it never occurred to me to leave, because then I was like, I was already on to, oh, now I get to do this, and now I get to do this, and now I get to do this, and no one asked me to leave. So I was happy to say, because, you know, as I said before, what it felt like, the finale felt like a finale of that type of story. And now I get to tell a different type of story with the Avengers, and that is as exciting to do for me as what I just accomplished. At the same time, thrilled that I got all the way through it. Thrilled. There's
sure.
So many things working against any creator who's got that kind of a long-term plan. But knowing that I'll be able to say, I got all the way through to the end of that, it was great. Yeah.
And
it's another one of those why I'm so thrilled for Jeff on Blackest Night, because at the time it looked like a crazy hill to climb. And he got all the way there.
Right, and now, much like you, exactly. Now there is a new page to turn, and that everyone can, you can address the new status quo and tell stories forward.
We turned Iron Page first. Thank you.
There you go. Now, since you're staying on, are you approaching the writing of Avengers and New Avengers differently than you did at the onset of the original New Avengers? Without giving details, are the books building towards a larger story in the future, or are you taking things on an arc-by-arc basis and just having fun with the heroic age?
It's more arc-by-arc, but there is an overlining theme that you can use the heroic age to label, but it means a little bit more to me than that. So,
in both Avengers books or just specifically in New Avengers? Because I remember you saying, and this is a good opportunity to talk about the issue that's coming out this week,
okay. And
I want to say, if I got it correct, they are all kind of addressing... You tell me, what is the overlying, you know, question that this team is asking?
That's a question I have to let the audience make their own mind about. You can't start doing Spike Lee always does that when he promotes his movies. He tells you what the movie's about before you go see it.
Okay.
It's lame.
You
never see Scorsese doing it. So... But what I will say is that what I'm digging, that people already saw a preview online, there is a seismically different tone to New Avengers that there was beforehand, and that there is to the other Avengers books, not just my other Avengers book, but the other one. All the books have really, really different tone, and I think they're all fun. And the corner of the Marvel Universe that New Avengers is going to be in, is going to be one of those where, like, the Avengers, if we're going to call that, you know, think they're at the center of the Marvel Universe with their big king problems,
mm-hmm.
But what's going on in New Avengers is 50 times more scary and earth-shattering. And the heroes there are faced with the, you get what you ask for. They wanted this, and now they got, you know what I mean? Now it's like, oh, boy. So when it comes out, I'm very excited for you to see it. It's the gathering of the new Avengers. There's be some surprises in the book as well beyond what we've already shown. And what we will hopefully accomplish in the arc is to start a redefinition of the magic structure of the Marvel Universe, which I think
yes.
is the biggest, coolest part of the Marvel Universe. There are connections between Iron Fist's world and Doctor Strange's world, and even some of the stuff that Wolverine's been having to deal with over the years. And so we're going to look at a connection between those. We're going to discover, you know, what the limitations and rules of magic are for the characters of Dr. Voodoo and Dr. Strange, and what their place will be in this new world. And that, to me, is a lot of fun to write.
Are there more additions to the team that we haven't seen yet that we will start seeing?
Yes.
Okay.
Moon Boy.
Sweet. Been a long time.
Dirk Anger from Next Wave. the Black Aqualad.
I'm trying to remember his name now. Dupe? No, Dupe?
Dupe?
Yeah, from X Factor.
Yeah, Dupe from X Force. That'd be great.
X Force, thank you. I miss Dupe. Okay.
Yeah, and Man Thing.
Thank you.
Everyone liked in Thunderbolt.
No, everyone likes a little more Man Thing in the Marvel Universe. Thank you.
Giant size Man Thing.
Indeed. Yeah. Dirtiest title in comic books. I'd like an extra giant size Man Thing, please. Step in the back. All right. Do you know if Marvel will...
And that flashback from Giants of Childhood comes to you from... What's your sponsor?
Yeah, News Depot, ladies and gentlemen.
Audible.com.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, check out the audiobook of that. Step in the back. It's one of my favorite books. Do you know if Marvel will continue the oversized hardcover program with your recent works? I love having oversized hardcovers of your new Avengers run on my shelf, along with the people from Seduced by a Cougar, obviously, along with the Powers books.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, of course not. And the Ultimate Spidey books. But do you have a say in having this program continue with the new volume of Ultimate Spidey or the new Avenger books, or are these not a financially viable format for Marvel?
I don't know. That's the truth. I know that just this week, oversized Ultimate Spider-Man hardcover came out, so I believe they're continuing.
Was that for the Ultimatum stuff?
I don't know.
Okay.
I didn't get my copies yet, so I don't actually remember what's in there.
Because I do... Now, you tease me and say I only buy the Bendis comic books that I'm in, but I do only buy the oversized hardcovers of story of comics that I'm in.
So you want to see the oversized version of you.
Yeah, well, actually, I see that every day when I look in the mirror, but thank you.
No, I actually don't know. I don't, and that's not a no. I actually do not have an answer
okay.
to that question. But all the formats will be awesome. That's all I can tell you.
Now, by the way, am I done? Was this my last issue in Ultimate Spider-Man?
Listen, if you're getting an 8-page finale monologue, then you're out.
Okay, fine. Well, no, you told me last time it wasn't my last scene or whatever.
It's not your last issue.
But that's hilarious.
Yeah, or it is.
Or whatever.
You're actually moving over to Ultimate X.
Dude, I was thrilled that I was on the recap page this month. I'm like, hey, there I am. That's fantastic. Jesus Christ. God, I'm working out. I swear to God. I swear to God, I'm not that fat.
That is not how I see you. That is how David sees you.
I understand. No, David's a good man. That's okay. Yeah. And so Stuart for doing it before.
No reference to any physicality.
No, all he had to do was find pictures of me online. It's not hard, sadly. Let's see.
Shut down that website of yours, that fetish site.
Yeah, no. Step in the back,
right.
Please.
How many times are you going to pay you to see pictures of your feet? I don't understand.
Yeah, I understand. You. I always love hearing what movies you're into, and was turned on to both Reds and Homicide based on past Bendis tapes. We were just talking
about
that.
Well, I'll do the opposite. You know, it's funny. Both me and Matt have been reading the Warren, Matt Faction, have been reading the Warren Baby book. He reads faster than me, so he's done. But what happens is you go on Netflix and go, oh, I would like to see Bugsy again. I want to see Bulworth again, you know? And then you come up and you go, you know, I've never seen even a frame of Town and Country.
That's terrible. I did see it. It's terrible.
Okay, so I put it in last night.
Terrible.
You can't even, it doesn't make any sense.
Thank you. Yes. Unwatchable.
There's no narrative.
It's no.
Just things are happening.
No.
Nothing.
It was,
and what's amazing is that everyone involved in the cast is an amazing actor and who've done amazing work together. So just think that the people who made Reds are standing next to each other and it doesn't make any sense. It's like they're just filming them standing there.
Well, I was going to say, I really think it was, let's have a nice week with our friends. because that's what it feels like. Yeah, it's
crazy.
Not
crazy.
I know. Now
crazy.
he didn't direct that one with Sean Penn and Gary Shandling, did he?
No, that's Hurley Burley. That's
yes, Hurley Burley, of course, which was very good.
It's based on a play.
Yes, yeah, no.
Shutter Island is on DVD. Shutter Island is a movie that I really liked. I know it is.
Well, it's not a DVD reissue, but that's fine. I agree. I think it's an excellent movie.
Shutter Island.
Well, he's saying DVD reissues. Catch your eye, Lily.
Oh, he wants DVD reissues.
But feel free to do new movies. So that's fine. I have no
problem with that. Oh, I thought we just do movies. Sorry.
Yeah,
DVD
do both
issues. Let's see. I like Hot Tub Time Machine. Did that get reissued?
I liked it too. I just saw it.
It's good. I know I plugged it okay, but the Homicide Criterion.
DVD, yeah, that's one.
Was one that I really dug into and had a very very good time with. The Goodfellas. Reissue on Blu-ray was really great.
Cool.
It's one of those where it's, you know, like sometimes in sci-fi movies when you get like Fifth Element always looks amazing on the new format.
Sure.
Whatever the new format is, it was one of those kind of wow, like I'm seeing things I never saw before. So
cool. Yeah. Any other good bonus stuff on the Goodfellas?
Yeah, there's actually tons of good stuff. There's documentaries on. What do we got here? We got a full-length documentary, Public Enemies, The Golden Age of the Gangster Film.
Oh, that's
cool. That.
Oh, that's very good.
That was one where I wasn't going to buy
that,
it again.
Is that Schickles? Gonna... Is that Richard Schickles' documentary?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
Richard Schickle, I want to say Time movie critic?
Doesn't say.
He's a film historian. He's awesome.
Gangster-themed cartoons.
Nah.
Two commentaries, Paper Cheaper Than Film, Storyboard to Screen Comparisons.
Schumacher doing a commentary?
Didn't say. Let's see.
Isn't that her name? That's her name.
Cast
right?
And crew with Martin Scorsese, Ray Liotta, Lorraine Bracco, Paul Sorvino, Frank Vincent, co-screenwriter Nicholas Pileggi, who I love.
Oh yeah. Oh my God.
And
yeah.
The other one is with
great
Henry
author.
Hill.
Henry oh, with Hill. Henry Hill. Wow.
He's not a lot in the room with everybody else. Huh?
What's Scorsese's editor?
Thelma Schumacher.
Yeah, Thelma Schumacher. Yeah,
she's
yeah.
She's not
yeah.
in this one.
Okay. Okay.
She's in others. She's on Raging Bull.
Yeah.
Which I highly recommend. But I was going to buy the Blu-ray Goodfellas. I got annoyed when I double dip, you know?
Sure.
And I always look at the back and they hit you with the bonus disc feature length documentary. Oh, fuck. God.
No, I'm with you. No, exactly. That's the only reason to go to Blu-ray these days because they're giving less and less features on the standard DVDs these days. So.
But because I'm on my Warren Beatty kick, I'll recommend Bullworth to you, which a lot of people haven't seen.
Love
really
that
great.
Movie. Love yeah, that movie.
Really great.
Yes, sir. Everybody, Don Cheadle's amazing in Bullworth.
He's really good. That's when he was kind of up and coming. And
yes,
stuff. He's
yes.
really good at it. And Halle Berry never looked better. I know I said this last thing. I remember saying it last time.
No, I love that movie. I love that whole everything about that movie. No, it kills me. Oliver Platt's great in that movie. Everybody.
Yep.
Akira, ladies and gentlemen. Brian and John, thanks again for another
and
round of the Bendis Tips.
The Informant is a movie no one saw that's really great.
Say it again?
In The Informant.
Oh, yeah.
By Steven Soderbergh. Thank you.
Yes. All right. You know what I like, and I don't think it's a reissue, but I finally saw The Offense, which is a Sean Connery film from the early 70s, the film that he kind of was able to play poker with MGM about James Bond or United Artists and said, I'll come back for Diamonds Are Forever if you let me make this movie as well. And I want to say Lumet was the director.
Wow.
And it's a really creepy psychological police drama about very, very tough killings of children. And he is the cop that is investigating. And it is a very dark film and very wow. amazing.
And
the
then
Offense.
He went home and slapped his wife.
I'm sure I did. I'm sure there's no question. Money Penny. All right, Akira.
Did you ever hear that Barbara Walters interview?
Absolutely, my man. I remember, sadly, and once again, old man, here I am. I remember seeing it live because it wasn't that long ago.
For those who don't know what we're talking about, it's a great interview where Barbara Walters, I don't know how to get on the subject, but he says he'll slap a woman to get her in line, and she goes, what? And he goes, sometimes it's the only way to get them to stop talking. I'm like, wow. And she even goes, well, you don't mean that, like, you know.
Yes.
For real. And he goes, no, yes, I do.
Yeah.
Like, and how, if that happened today to a major movie star.
He'd have to quit like Helen Thomas just had to quit.
You never hear from them again.
Absolutely.
And the fact that he went on and everything was fine, he said that on national television.
It was right around. And it was right around Red October, yeah. It didn't make a dent. Did not make a
nothing.
Dent. other than making it on
Charlie
every
Sheen is the only person that can do that do an interview. Well, she wouldn't stop talking.
Yeah. Mr. Connery, we've got a community amazing. Theater in Arizona. We'd like you to go and do some work for in there.
Amazing.
That kills me. Yeah, that seriously, that is the greatest. Like he is bulletproof Charlie Sheen. It is crazy. And I hate, man, I'll tell you, I like Chuck Lorre. I think Chuck Lorre's a smart, funny writer. And yes, he writes a lot of shitty sitcoms as well. And I'm not a big fan of Two and a Half Men. I don't understand
it. I've never seen it.
I don't get it. I mean, I do get it because it's the same sensibilities.
It would be hilarious if I've seen every episode of Two and a Half Men, but I've never seen The Wire.
That'd be kind of sad.
That's why my books dropped 20%. Anyway.
But you know something I understand because, and I don't mean this as an insult to either show, but it is kind of that same feeling about Married with Children and why it was successful.
Yeah.
I mean, it hits the gut, and people like that. That's all right. A lot of hotties on that show. Nothing wrong with that.
Is there hotties on Two and a Half Men?
Yes, there are. Oh, my God, yeah. Oh, shit, yeah. Oh, tons of tail. Tons of quality tail. Absolutely.
Quality tail, you say?
If you will. Akira. You mentioned in the past that Brubaker not been game for keeping Matt in prison for his first Daredevil arc, you wouldn't have been able to end your run the same way. How would you have ended it instead? Would you have just stopped at Decalogue, or would you have had another arc in mind to finish out your run with?
I would have come looking for writers until someone said, hey, look, it's Jason Aaron, the new writer of Daredevil.
Nice.
Nah, you know what? It wasn't even a thing. We're good friends, and it wasn't even a question. I never had to ask myself that question. So
cool.
There was no other secret script written that
it was sitting on standby or anything.
No. I was a year into it, and I knew I got to go all the way. So
speaking of Daredevil, I know it's still a ways off, but can you give us an update on the status of Daredevil: The End? Is there any new collaborators involved that haven't been mentioned yet?
I will be in New York in 3 weeks, and I'm sure that is on the list of things for them to say. Okay, listen, seriously, finish it.
Okay.
So we will get to it. I mean, the problem is that every single person working on that book is working on an ongoing series, including the amazing Klaus Janson, who's inking Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, not getting enough credit for it. It's amazing to have him on the book.
They're a great team. They really are a great team.
We have two issues done, finished, kaput, done, but we have to finish it. So we will have it finished.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm working on a comic with an artist right now. Originally, we were thinking about just publishing it in single issues, and then eventually, if we could afford it, and the demand was there, collecting the issues in a trade. Now we're planning on publishing the first issue as sort of a preview, but then publishing a longer graphic novel with what would have been the next four or five issues, and just skipping the single issues altogether. As someone who's familiar with self-publishing, does this seem like a feasible plan, and do you have any recommendations?
Well, you know what, man? I mean, here's the deal. You're not going to make any money no matter what you do. You're just not. So make a decision on what would you like it to be? What would you like it to be? And try to find a way to make it happen. Do you want it to be issues? Do you want it to be a graphic novel? It's your work. No, there's no rules. What do you want it to be? And do that. Find a way to make it happen. Either by self-publishing or without. Excuse me.
You want to, I mean, and you don't necessarily think that maybe... Even the first issue online, and then, you know, or like, you know, here, sample this, and then...
There's no way to know. I will say that, you're giving your shit away for free. You're saying to someone it's not worth anything is a philosophy. There's no book in the world that benefited, that built a fan base by the free first issue. It's never happened. Name one. You can't do it. You're trying right now. You'd love to throw this at me, and you can't do it. You know, you go to Comixology, all these cool little comics that they have the first free issue, and they're just saying, we don't know what to do. That's what they're saying. And they're all cool. They're, you know what I mean? Some of them are really neat, nifty, but you're shooting yourself in the foot.
Well, I'm hearing decent success stories about, Atomic Robo and things like that offering a first free issue.
You know where you heard it from?
Who?
The guy who does Atomic Robo.
Well, but okay.
Right. No, I've heard it too, actually, and I'm just joking around. I heard, but I don't know. I don't know what the numbers are. I don't know. See, that's another thing people do. They tell you about how successful they are, and people go, "Ooh, I have to pick this up, see what the hubbub's about." But I don't know if it's real or not. I don't know.
Bromfield, that I believe is Mary Marvel's adopted name. It is, though. I'm sorry, but I do know that.
That would be the title of your autobiography.
Did you like the Ten Commandments was a remake? Really? All right. Let's see. Thanks, guys, for doing this again. I'm a huge fan of you both.
Excited to finally contribute some questions to this excellent podcast series. Brian is a huge fan of villains in comics. I know what you and Marvel have done with Norman Osborn as Iron Patriot during Dark Reign and Siege. What are some of your favorite supervillains from Marvel and DC, and why?
I always, you know, I like the ones that have an arguable point. I'm not a fan of World Domination. I'm a fan of Magneto and the Kingpin, and when written well, have a very specific agenda that, if not for their Aspergery bipolar ways, would make for an interesting argument.
Sure.
That's what I like, and that's what I look for when I'm creating my antagonists, as I call them. And that's what I like. I like any character that has that. I like when Lex Luthor is being smart. I like, you know what I mean? And some of these characters have had as dumb a story as they've had a smart story. So it's hard to point and go, that's my favorite. If that's my favorite when done well. So I like the big ones. I like, you know?
Yeah.
I like the, yeah.
No, I agree. And or even more importantly, beyond you understand, you really get the motivation and you kind of almost sympathize with him and go, well, yeah, from his standpoint, you could see why he's so pissed off. You can understand why he's, you know.
Right.
So, yeah, I get that. Of the ones you haven't written yet, which major Marvel villains would you like to use in the future?
That I haven't written yet, it's tough to say, but there's ones that I've touched just peripherally or a little bit. And while I was doing it, like Count Nefaria was the star of the new Avengers finale. And as I was writing it, I wrote this whole big backstory about what he's doing in L.A. And when I believe I will return to this. I got excited.
Cool.
I came.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, it was a lot of fun seeing him. You're right, and and I'm glad you mentioned that because that was one of the nice surprises of the book, and it was an interesting scene. Much like the Purple Man, I still think there's a lot for you to explore with the Purple Man.
You know, that's one of those that the legend of it is becoming greater than the actual thing that it was. So I think I just leave it alone and have people remember that.
Interesting.
I did something cool. So
okay, because and I forget his name now, but the guy that. The Sentry snapped within Dark Avengers. What's that bad guy's name that changes reality?
The Sentry snapped in Dark Avengers?
Yeah, the reality.
The Molecule Man?
Thank you, Molecule Man.
Yeah,
you.
I like that too. I got stuff for him too.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
See, that's where, honestly, that's where my gray area is sometimes. It's guys like Molecule Man in the Marvel Universe. I'll admit it.
You could have come off of Molecule Man, but you did Brian Fields with Mary Marvel.
I did. I'm really sad to say that, yes, C.C. Beck's work is a lot more readily available for me. Mary Bromfield, ladies and gentlemen, thank you. She was adopted, too, you know, by a different family. They were well-to-do. I know. Is
you
it
know,
no wonder?
Like one genetic like shift to the left or right, and that's who you are. That's the funny thing.
As ladies,
like one Y chromosome to the left, and you're just... You're at the con talking to the inker of Justice Society about your Mary Marvel.
Erwin Hasen, how are you? Let's sit down and have a nosh. Come on. I love that dude.
I'm just saying that, you'll be at a con and hear there's some inker trying to get a sketch done. And there's some guy just standing over him going on and on about Darkhawk.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, ladies, is it any wonder that he's still single? Thank you. Andrew J., folks, what part or parts of Scott McCloud's understanding comics do you disagree with, and why?
I don't agree with any of it. No, that'd be hilarious. I don't get it.
I want that quote on the back of the book. I don't get it, Brian Bendis.
What? Anyway, my biggest concern with the work really has to do with the underpinning of certain genres are not as valuable as others. I don't like it. I find it to be false. I find it to be, when I hear creators doing that, I find that it is dishonest. Just last night I was listening to Evan Dorkin rant off about stuff in that video interview, which you have to see if you haven't seen it yet.
I haven't. Tell me what you're that saying.
I think Rich has it, but I saw it on Twitter.
Okay.
Diodato had it, and it's a 25-minute, not entirely a crash and burn, but it not far off. And there's this ongoing, you know, mainstream comics, blah, 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 the superhero genre, blah, 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 you know.
Oh, I want to read it.
Disdain. And it's dishonest, and I find it to be incorrect, and it devalues, let's go back to Scott here, it devalues the integrity of the book. because a lot of the things that he's saying in the book were born out of the genre that he's referring to. So, but he likes it better when it was done in this place or that place, and that's incorrect. And I think it's trying to be too cool for school, and I don't appreciate it. And I didn't. And I'm not saying this is someone who's, you know, working in mainstream comics. I felt this way before I was at Marvel and I read it. I went, well, that's bullshitty, you know. So that's my problem with it. But there's other things in it that are fantastic, and I make it required reading for my class.
There you go.
So that is how much I admire it. But I think that any book like this should be given to debate. And
sure.
I'll give Scott all the credit in the world. When I was saying these things about this book on my board a couple of years ago, he showed up on the board and had the debate publicly with me, which I really appreciated.
I vaguely remember that.
And told him so. I said, "Well, you're the real deal, man."
Very cool.
If you write a book like that way, write a book like that, you should be open to the debate. You should, you know, and that's cool. So there's certain creators that I know, either being behind the scenes or observing very clearly, were hoping for that mainstream break and they wanted it, but they didn't want it for the right reason, and then they didn't end up getting it for whatever reason, and then they get shitty about it. And I understand the emotion, but I don't think it's honest, and I don't think it's fair. And I don't appreciate it. That's all. Does that make sense?
Sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, and again, Scott and Evan, too, is someone I admire a great deal. So when I see the snarky, I go, oh, come on, man. You're better than that.
We wrap with Jason Wood, ladies and gentlemen, of the 11 o'clock.
What?
Jason Wood is our final question. We said we'd,
yes.
we'd go to 90.
I'm out of air.
I can tell. I know. You poor guy. What? You got allergies? Or?
I got two phlegmy children. Go to phlegm school. Come home and they flock around.
So along with China,
my 2-year-old. Literally, I mean, I'm holding her all day, and that's why I got these guns to steal. And she did it today. You know, I'm sitting there talking. She grabs me by the ears to get my attention. Looks me in the face, and I go, "What?" And she coughs right in my mouth.
Uh-huh.
And I know there's nothing but cuteness involved, but you're like, "Oh, great, now I got that."
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. I was going to say,
it's all right. I'm functional and fine. It's just there's constant boogers and phlegm. And
all right. I was going to say, while Olivia's learning Chinese, she's also learning some Flemish as well. Is that what you're talking about?
Oh,
all right.
Boy.
Thank you. But, you know,
by the way, if I was going to hang up on you, it would be right now.
Yeah, thank you. No. Take Jason Wood's question. This is a good wrap-up question, actually.
Okay. All right.
He says, "I'm popping my Bendis tapes. Cherry, please be gentle."
Ooh.
Jason is from the iFanboy website and also the 11 o'clock comics podcast.
Oh, look at you.
Well, I'm just, you know, being nice. Actually, he signed it. Jason Wood, co-host.
Despite your best efforts.
Yeah, to the contrary, exactly. Yeah. No, he signed it, too. Jason Wood, co-host, 11 o'clock comics. But here we go.
You hate him. Oh, my God.
No, not at all. No, he's a good guy.
Your whole voice was deep. 11 o'clock.
Jason Wood. That's how they say it. No, they're fine. They're good guys.
How much is your bandwidth?
He attained an inordinate level of success in this business through hard work and, let's admit, talent. But you've also never wavered from your viewpoint that your time at the top of the mountain will end someday.
Oh, this is how we're ending this? Oh.
So my question is, at this very moment, what are the biggest challenges to doing what you do? What's hard about being Bendis right now? Oh, no, I sense another hang-up coming. Plug the panel before.
Well, I'll tell you, I've changed my mind. I think I'm going to stay here forever on top of the mountain.
Okay.
Of course, last month I thought it was over, but now I think I'm back. No, listen, I honestly, man, you know what I mean? I look at it like this. Every month that things go well, it seems you get like two more months in comics.
Right.
You know, and that's, we've talked about this in the past. Look at the guys in front of me. But the biggest challenge, no, the challenges are creative. Which means they're fucking exciting, man.
Sure.
You know what I mean? I got the cool thing is I've created a situation. There's nothing standing in my way. I got my wife does all the hard work as far as running the business, and Magdalene does it 50 times better than they ever would in a million years, and I'm not just saying that. And my editorial support at Marvel, and thanks to you guys, the reception to the books is so over-the-top awesome. that all I have to do is sit down and do something cool and try to really do it as honestly as possible. That is not a challenge. That is I don't know what the word for it is, but you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So for me to come up with anything I could bitch about, anything would be so uncool on every conceivable level. So, that's that.
Okay. Well, as we wrap up quickly, I just want to... I know, Fleming.
Right now, the hardest thing is breathing.
I can appreciate
talking
that.
At the same time.
Well, I'm going to let him... I'll let you rest your throat and quickly say
Let me tell you something.
Go ahead.
You're amazing.
Why?
He doesn't cop to this. He has to chase me down a little bit to get these things going, and he does so with enthusiasm, and I appreciate that.
We would say no genius, but you're a good man.
When he wants to get these done, I'm usually putting my kids to bed, and sometimes, as parents will tell you, that they can become an Olympic event. So I appreciate your patience with me,
my man.
For people who didn't listen the first 10 minutes of this for some reason, we'll be doing this live in San Diego Comic-Con on Saturday at like noon or something.
Cool.
I'll post the times.
As will I.
I have two panels set. Both of them have the potential for disaster and awesomeness. One of them is us.
Okay.
I'm going to bring Scarlett to the panel. If you ask a question, you get Scarlett.
Fantastic.
Alternative cover. The other panel is Marvel Writers Unite. It's me, Matt, Kurt Busiek, Chris Claremont, and it's being moderated by Mark Waid.
Wow.
That sounds like a disaster.
I look forward to that.
I was like, I go, I don't know what they should call it. The writers who not all of them care for each other.
Awesome. Well, because I was going to say that.
Younger writers are really like the older writers. The older writers probably don't care for us much.
It reminds me of that New York panel you did with DeFalco and Denny O'Neill.
You know what? That's what Matt said. Ooh, we get to do one of those. I go, yeah, I didn't want that to happen.
But that was awesome.
I know it was awesome. And I will be honest at the panel. I will be not rude, but I'll be honest. And
ooh, Candor coming.
Fun.
Ooh, that's fantastic. And not the bottled city of Candor, the real Candor. Wow,
so,
cool.
So we'll see. And I think Chris Claremont likes me. Anyway, so we're clear. I'm not talking about Chris.
Interesting.
But
no, thank you, my man. That's very kind. Now we're back on the
okay.
Record. Exactly.
Listen, he just edited, but if you heard what he just said, it was amazing. Anyway, so...
No, thanks a lot for offering the chance
problem.
To do the panel. That's great, and really looking forward to it, and gave me another excuse to be in San Diego, which I haven't been in a couple of years, so I'm really looking forward to seeing everybody.
Yeah, I haven't been there in a long time. I'm curious to see what it feels like. I'm also Scarlett, number one. July 7th, I'm told.
Yay.
And I please do try it out. We're very, very proud of it on our end. And very happy to report very healthy numbers for a creator-owned book. So that was a relief because it is a scary marketplace. You never know. So I appreciate my Twitter whining being met with such generosity.
Excellent. And
thanks to you guys. I really appreciate that beforehand. So
very cool. And yeah, depending on schedule, the panel might be the next time we hear the next edition of the Bendis Tapes. But if not, that's we've been doing good, and we've only got 30 questions left, kids.
Look at that.
So we're doing pretty good. We're down to the last quarter.
Oh, John, I totally forgot to tell you this.
Please.
This is actually really important.
I don't believe him. I knew that was coming. Thank you. And we pause there after 90 questions have been answered on this current session of the Bendis Tapes. As we speak, another Marvel Story Summit is happening in New York this week, and we'll see when our next session of the Bendis Tapes might be. It may not be until after San Diego Comic-Con, but we're not through with today's episode. Right now, we check in with writer Edward David Gill, who's a longtime Avengers fan. You'll learn that in this interview, and he also has a new book that we're featuring here on Word Balloon. On the phone, I have Edward David Gill, the author of The Expert on Everything, a novel. Gill spent some time in Los Angeles working for production companies like Ted Danson's. He's written several screenplays, and he co-founded two technology companies specializing in business intelligence and data mining.
it, I think, makes him an expert on the expert of on everything. It's a pleasure to talk to you, Edward. Thanks for joining the show.
Oh, thanks very much, John. I am a big fan, and I must tell you, I'm a big comic book reader.
Well, then you'll appreciate the comparison I'm about to make, though, because, as you say, the book is a technology political thriller which examines how much privacy will trade for national security. It's funny, I was going back on some of my older interviews, and that's exactly how Axel Alonso summed up Civil War.
That's actually, you know, I actually see that in a way. Yeah, I followed Civil War the whole way through. I'm into the heroic age, as we all are, and Blackest Night, and now Brightest Day.
I think it's in the air, not only your novel, but I see that they are revisiting the 3 Days of the Condor story on AMC, and a new miniseries called Rubicon is starting later this year. And I also noticed that you described your book as being somewhere between Catch-22 and 3 Days of the Condor. So.
Yes, somebody, you know, I live in Los Angeles, and that's, you know, L.A. speak for how you describe anything. It's like this meets that. And someone said it's Catch-22 meets 3 Days of the Condor, and I almost kissed them. It was just great to hear that, and it was pretty accurate. I mean, it's sort of a political thriller with an attitude. You know, the protagonist is a young 20-something with an attitude. And he gets the story is basically he interviews for a job with a brand new technology company, is offered six figures within like 30 seconds of the interview, and then you know, chapters progress, we meet the ensemble cast, and he is given the only prototype that exists of their technology, which can definitively erase the concept of privacy on the planet Earth. I mean, and it's basically you know, a little earbud, and it speaks to you in your language, and it's called Wallace for reasons that are explained in the novel, and you become the expert on anything, on everything, because you just merely have to speak, and your earbud will give you instant answer to anything. The tension arises when a lot of people are after this prototype, which is sort of the 3 Days of the Condor part of the story, but then the twist is that the technology starts getting its own ideas of what its agenda is.
So it's developed an artificial intelligence.
Yeah, and it's not just, you know, what is the you know, the bank account of the person you're flirting with at the bar. It's also, you know, what precisely are the North Korean nuclear placements? Where exactly are they? Every single database in the world, open and closed, is available to this Wallace construct, and so you really have, you know, an incredible amount of potentially dangerous information at your hand. And the company, the idea was to sell it to the public. So complete transparency. Can you imagine? I mean, I would argue well, that privacy actually doesn't exist, but that's another, you know.
Well, and, you know, you see the issues that Facebook has today with privacy, yeah, and the way that, yeah, they're handling consumer information. And so, no, I don't think this is as science fiction as some people might think it is. And also, given your background in software, have you seen examples of technology that kind of led you to this idea?
Yes, I've seen stuff that would blow your hair back. In fact, I did a lot of research. The technology that I describe, it's a work of imagination. But the technology that I describe in the novel is based on some real stuff that I've been exposed to. I mean, you know, I know this for a fact. As you type cat on a keyboard, it can be picked up by a server in real time.
Wow.
And that can be, and the scale of that, the whole country could type in words, and that all can be picked up. Now, here's a quick little digression. Everyone's concern about privacy from a business point of view, I think, is unfounded, because I'm in business, and I deal with technology and sell it, basically, to the media and entertainment industry. They could care less who you are. It's what you are in terms of what kind of purchasing power and predilections that you represent. So you're an IP number, non-trackable. You're not even an IP number. You're sort of this untrackable number, and they can do a lot of targeting and segmenting, they being the big branded companies of the world. But they really don't care who you are. It gets into the political sphere where I get a little worried about who we all are out there, because then we're all open to shakedowns and things like this if we're not potentially voting the right way.
Conspiracy theorist?
Thank you. I'm not a big conspiracy theorist. But for the purpose of telling a story, that's where the conflict is.
in the political nature of having complete transparency, and that's where I go in the story. That's a long way of saying that.
And there are a lot of privacy advocates that agree, and they aren't lunatics, and they're not people that, you know, think the government is out to get them, but they're asking those legitimate questions of what can someone do with this kind of information and how they can modify behavior if they know that an entire group of people, not known by name, but if they can point to a large body of people geographically and say that they are inclined to this kind of behavior, yeah, what kind of manipulation can be achieved? No, this is all very fair game, and it's a fair question to ask.
It's timely, and frankly, you know, the actual true world has caught up to my novel story a lot quicker than I thought it was. A lot of what I'm talking about, frankly, is possible now. It's not done that I'm aware of, but it is possible. And, I think really, you know, it's not even, at the end of the day, though, the logical extension of this is not really a question of technology. I think it's a question of ethics. If it's a given that transparency exists, and I think it does, it may not be utilized to the extent that it can be now, but there is no privacy, really. Every time you're on the Internet, you should think of that as a tape recorder. Your email, for example. One of the CEOs, I forget who said that, and I love that line. Whenever you're on email, you're on a tape recorder. So act accordingly inside your company, et cetera. And your clicks and everything across the Internet, those are pretty trackable as well. And so it's not really about technology. That horse is out of the barn. It's about ethics. Who are we? And are we willing to be more, give more allowances for our behavior, be more open to each other, let people be who they are, and maybe we'll all be less open to being shaken down by different political groups that way. You know, our voting habits and things like this, and being bombarded in the mail with all the things that we are blindly now, are about to become more targeted, and we're going to find out who people think we are by, in the future, the things that we are bombarded with. Hopefully there'll be opt-in things that we will actually be interested in, like I hope to get a lot of comic book offers myself. But, you know, when you take this to the extreme in business, I can tell you this. It's called addressable advertising. The idea is that every house on the block gets its own unique commercial when the commercials come on TV. This is being worked on now. It exists.
Wow.
And it's just not commercial. They're working out the commercial parts. But, you know, Household A gets the diaper ads. The next door neighbor gets the snow ski weekend ad. The other one gets the comic book ads in real time based on their behavior over the set-top box. Not only what they do, but what they don't do. Which commercials don't you watch? Which commercials do you hover over for literally 2 seconds before you hit the button? This is all possible. This is the world I deal with in business now. And these are the new business models that are coming up. And in the expert on everything, I just take it again to that political conspiracy type of fun stuff in a political vein. But meanwhile, as you say, John, in the real world, we're living it step by step.
Well, and it's already apparent online. I know that when the iPad first, you know, debuted, I would go to non-comic book sites like the Huffington Post or other, you know, news information sites, and I'd see ads for apps. And the Marvel app kept popping up. And I'm like, that's a weird place for the Marvel app. But then I realized that, exactly. A tracing cookie told them that I'm interested in comic books, and so comic book ads appear in places that I don't normally see comic book information.
I do research on some of my clients, and I see ads relevant to my clients pop up, and I'm like, wow, that was quick.
I should ask, what do you think of digital comics?
Well, you know, I like it. As I said, I'm a comic book reader, not a collector, although I am looking at three boxes over here.
That's pretty good. But, I understand, man. It's tougher to reduce to only three boxes.
Yeah, it's a lot of picking and choosing. I'm a big Avengers guy, JLA guy, groups. I guess I like groups, teams.
Okay.
I like it digital. You know, I read a lot of things digital. You know, some friends of mine, you know, compose long things on their telephones. Others need the computer, and some do it longhand. I like reading books, although I must say I haven't purchased one. But I like the idea of having 7,000 books on a Kindle or an iPad or something
sure.
like that. So, and as far as comic books go, you know, it works for me. It's a visual storytelling, and if the visual is on a piece of paper or if it's on an iPad, it frankly doesn't matter to me. I must say. The idea about motion comics, I've tried that. That's kind of cool. I could see that could get a little tedious, maybe. But it's still early days in that whole kind of unique art form. It's sort of like watching a movie trailer, but on and on and on.
Interesting.
So I'm not sure if my attention span... I like going into my own imagination with the static, you know, just the images on the page and the words, and then I kind of take it at my own pace and think about it and read. And with the motion, I have to kind of keep up. So that's my only note on that.
That's we'll interesting, because yeah. You're right. I think that's always been a strength that people have pointed to about reading comic books, that it is the reader's ability to control the speed of how they're getting the information. And now the motion comic kind of takes that away. Very interesting.
Yeah.
Do you have any ambitions to ever write comic books yourself?
You know, that's an interesting question. I've written some screenplays, and I would think it's sort of similar to that, but I haven't looked into it. It seems daunting to me, and I don't know why. I think it's just because having grown up reading comic books, I put that kind of storytelling on a big, high pedestal, quite frankly. But sure, I mean, a good story is a good story. It doesn't matter the medium. It would be different. I'd have to learn how to the structure of that, how you
yes.
do it, because I know writing novels is different than writing screenplays, obviously, and I think that must apply to comic books, although I've never tried. My first comic book was Avengers number 58, Even Androids Can Cry, where the Vision joined. And the artwork of John Buscema just grabbed me.
Absolutely.
And I never let go.
And
him
even
and Neil Adams were the classic artists for me.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And especially that last panel of that story, too, where literally the Vision does cry. And
exactly.
And there is such emotion on his face. I know what you mean, man. I had that Treasury Edition collection of Avengers stories. It included the Yellow Jacket and Wasp wedding.
That's the first time that I
really read an Avengers book back in the early 70s. So that's really funny.
And here's a claim to fame. In New Avengers, number 5, my letter appears in the letter column. Thank
wow. Now, what was your question or what was your comment? Were you negative?
I think it was basically saying, no, it says, I felt compelled after seeing Mr. Stan Lee write as a fan to do so also. Bendis is Bendis. What can I say? He creates with characterizations and story wrapped in a theme with a definite direction that moves forward. But then I comment on the art, and basically I think I say, like, Buscema is the definitive, but Finch was the guy who's like, okay, this is what these characters really look like. There's always one artist for me.
Sure.
That, okay, what do I want to know how... He draws the way the character actually looks like, so that's Hawkeye for me, the guy. So, and Finch is the current guy who does that for me.
That's interesting. And what do you think of Bendis's current Avenger partners? He's got John Romita Jr. on the Avenger book. Stuart Immonen is still on New Avengers, and Alan Davis doing Avengers Prime.
Okay, Romita, it's like going back in time. I mean, timeless for me. Thumbs up, thumbs up. Interesting. Immonen. He's like a chameleon. I don't know
exactly
how he changes his art style.
Isn't it interesting? Yeah, go ahead. Because I think it's amazing that he's changed his style once again for this new volume of the New Avengers.
I know, and I never recognize him. Quite frankly, I have to look in the front cover all the time. And go, oh, and Alan Davis is for me in the Neil Adams school, you know. And I really like that kind of. I like photorealistic. I guess it's called. That's my thing. So
sure.
I'm a big Alan Davis fan. That's great. And isn't Diodato doing one of
He's doing Secret things? Avengers with Brubaker.
That's it. And, you know, I have to tell you, that's the one I've glommed onto the most, so coming out of the gate.
Well, and again, like a very realistic kind of photorealistic style, so that makes sense.
Yeah, and the story, I'm into, obviously, political thriller type of story.
That's true.
So I think that's
the covert book. That's right. That's the covert book. What are your what kind of spy comics interest you of late?
Ooh, spy comics. Well, Black Widow. I've read the first two of Black Widow, and you had interviewed the writer, I remember.
Paul Cornell did the miniseries. Marjorie Liu, I know, is doing the current series, and she's
Marjorie
very good
Liu.
As well.
Yeah. It's hers, I think,
is
the latest.
Yes, that's right, Marjorie Liu.
Yeah, those are the two that I've read. I like it. Good story. I like a good story.
That's excellent. Simple. How about Queen and Country?
And
have you ever read Greg Rucka's Oni Press
Queen
and Country?
I never have. No, I never have. I'm a real Marvel DC guy, and I go out of the box for, I've just discovered Brian Wood, Deviate.
Oh, fantastic.
And he's doing something brand new, God and Monsters, I think. And I'm on the first three chapters in my comic book store here in, I'm going to plug it, Earth 2 Comics.
Oh, sure.
Ventura Boulevard.
Absolutely.
They, Judd over there turned me on to his earlier work, Highlanders.
Northlanders.
And I've just started reading that. Boy, he's a good writer. I like him.
And I would say check out DMZ because it's fantastic, and it kind of although I can appreciate, you know, it's funny, my friend Tim Seeley, who does a wonderful job on the Hack Slash comic book, had never watched Buffy, and once he decided to do Hack Slash, stayed away from Buffy and has never watched Buffy, and they kind of, you know, fall in a similar realm. So I can also appreciate being a political thriller writer. You may not like you may want to stay away from the geopolitics that Rucka gets into, because it might you don't want to be.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Maybe that's sort of what I'm doing. I don't know.
Or Max Brooks and Robert Kirkman. Robert Kirkman stopped reading Max Brooks's zombie books because he didn't want to be influenced for The Walking Dead.
Wow, interesting. Well, here, I'll give you a hint. The Expert on Everything is really, in my mind, the beginning of a trilogy, and I'm working on the next version, the next story, and it's basically, okay, we jump in the future a bit, we posit that privacy doesn't exist. Now, if there's no transparency in the government, hello, and the transparency is on the side of us, so that we can be seen everywhere, anytime, then only the man who can be in more than one place at the same time is safe and dangerous. I know it sounds like something, but it's not. That's all I'll say.
There we go. All right, well, we'll wait for the next book. That's excellent. You got a great review from bookreview.com, giving you 5 stars. Big Brother Meets Big Business in Edward David Gill's novel, The Expert on Everything. And essentially, you know, there's a good description there at your website of what the book is about. And it's available through Amazon. And, you know, so people can buy the book either through your website, theexpertoneverything.com, or find it at Amazon as well under your name.
Yep, that's exactly right. And I would appreciate anyone taking a look at it. A good story is a good story. Hopefully this is one.
Sounds like a cracking story. The Expert on Everything, written by Edward David Gill. It is available now. Make sure you check it out. Go to theexpertoneverything.com. Edward, thanks a lot for your time, and good luck with the book. And hopefully we'll have a chance to talk about something new in the future.
Thank you, John. I'm a big fan. It was a pleasure.
Writer Edward David Gill. Don't forget, we're on the road to San Diego with more interviews coming, leading to July's Comic-Con International. Another Word Balloon episode is on the way later this week. Today's episode was brought to you by Edward's book, The Expert on Everything, a novel that's been described as Catch-22 meets 3 Days of the Condor. You just heard Edward talk about the book. Go to the website to check out more details on the book itself, theexpertoneverything.com, or you can see it as well being sold at amazon.com. It's The Expert on Everything from Edward David Gill. That'll do it for this edition of Word Balloon. Thanks again for listening. John Suntress reminding you that more coverage coming of San Diego Comic-Con in the days and weeks ahead. If you have any questions or comments about the show, you can reach me via email, john@wordballoon.com, or you can follow me on Twitter, John Word Balloon, or on Facebook under my name, John Suntress. Also, you can check out our website, wordballoon.com, for our archive of well over 300 interviews with various creators. And follow a link right there on the website to the Word Balloon message board if you want to comment further on this episode or any other topics that we have going on at jinxworld.com, where you'll find the Word Balloon message board. Thanks for listening. Until next time, Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions. Copyright 2010.